And we are live. This is Failed State Update, and I am Joseph L. Flatley. Kind of a series of unfortunate events this morning. Due to technical difficulties, we don't have any cameras. JG Michael is under the weather, so it's just me. But doesn't matter. We have a fantastic episode for you. I am talking to Oki of the a documentarian and YouTuber, if you want to use that as a verb. His stuff is available on YouTube if you look for Oki's Weird Stories. How you doing, Oki?
I'm great. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I guess you're a friend of the show now because we did a interview with you about your secret space program conspiracy video. So the secret space program conspiracy theory or conspiracy community is essentially a bunch of people who believe that either the government's lying and that they have bases on the moon or that they're fighting, humans are fighting in far flung corners of the galaxy. It's just this whole crazy conspiracy mythology. But you actually you went in, you got deep, you infiltrated the group. So it's like your video kind of adds like this whole level of craziness to the story, which I really admire.
Yeah. So like, it's still pretty obscure, the conspiracy community that are focused on the secret space program. And I don't think that they've had like a video like mine that kind of signal boosted like their community and like actually like put it like, you know, this is the established name of the community. This is what they're up to and like talked about it in depth. And yeah, I had some pretty high up people in the secret space program community kind of like post about me on their social media. Like Corey Good posted about me. Yeah. And he was like, oh, here's an example of these people. He's talking about like the guy, James Rink, who interviewed me in the video. And he's like, oh, here's an example of the people who are fake. And I'm not fake, guys. Please believe me, kind of thing. And then like Michael Sala also pretty much said the same thing. So it was pretty funny. Even more so than the video doing well and people liking it and it being well received. I was more so surprised and amused by like the secret space program insiders, the whistleblowers like Corey Good actually like going out there and saying, you know, trying to like disavow James and like the people who were that I included in the video.
That's, you know, it's such a, like, I can't believe you found a conspiracy theory that hasn't been like done to death already. Like that just right there is like impressive. What the fuck? You know,
trying to like disavow.
I think he got
yeah, how did that happen? Oh, that's your
I think you got your stream on.
Yeah, that was your Jack Idema doc. Somehow I hit play on that. So it was like double the Oki. How did the secret space program story, when did you wrap that up and how did it lead to this Jack Idema doc that we're about to talk about?
Okay. So how did I wrap it up? I had to wait. Oh, okay. So that was like, God, I want to say, was it December? December of 2021? It might have been. I don't remember. It was several months ago for sure. And I guess the way I wrapped it up is I had to wait for James Rink to post the interview that we did to like add the ending to the video, because there was no real video unless he posted it onto his channel. So I had to wait. I waited, I think, a month for him to do that. And there was one point where I offered him like $60 to just like expedite the release of it. And then he was like, oh no, I don't need your money or whatever. I'm just going to post them. I don't know. I was just itching for him to release it. And I mean, this is a guy who like sells hypnosis sessions, and I thought he might be, that might interest him.
Yeah. So for anybody who hasn't watched the video, so you found this guy that claims to hypnotize people and take them back into like past lives where they were like space warriors essentially, and kind of like learn about their past lives. And you like went so far as to like purchase a hypnosis session, and then like over Skype or Zoom or whatever, he like quote unquote hypnotized you. And it's really funny because you're just like rolling your eyes or whatever, you know, and it's like, and takes you through this bizarre scenario. And like the ending of your movie was going to be, or, you know, kind of the, you know, going towards the ending was going to be your session with him and then you interviewing him. And then he just sat on the video. Like he just didn't upload it for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. It took like a month. And then, yeah, I offered him $60, and then, I think it was within a week he finally posted it. And then he posted it. And then I think within 2 or 3 days, I posted my video. Yeah. And then I sent him an email being like, I'm sorry, I tricked you.
I love working with people who don't have traditional journalism careers, because they're just like offering people money left and right. I'm doing producing a documentary with a guy, and he's like the same. He's like, you know, I'll just offer him $500 for an interview, and I'm like,
oh no. So I've never done that. I've never but I've interviewed a lot of people on my channel. I've never offered money for an interview. Mm-hmm. But and like I just wanted him to expedite the release of his of the interview. Mm-hmm. That he did of me.
How, so Jack Idima, I remember when this story happened, it was really crazy. He was like, you know, it was during the gold rush after the invasion of Iraq and then Afghanistan, where like it seemed like every shady character out there was going to the Middle East, was going to wherever we were fighting wars and like throwing themselves into it, like, you know, somewhere. Selling arms, some were private military contractors, some were kind of like just nebulous business people, some were opening pizza restaurants apparently. But Jack Idima, I guess he was pretty notorious in those circles, but we didn't hear about him back in the United States until he was arrested for like basically having a private prison and torturing Afghan citizens, including a Supreme Court judge. How did you first hear about this case?
Actually, it was recommended to me by a viewer of mine. Yeah. And as soon as like he gave like a really quick rundown of what like the story is about, and like, okay, yeah, that sounds wild. Kind of like the whole ethos of my channel has always been, I talk about like over the top people who are very, very manic, very crazy. They often are like liars, cons, cheats,
like John McAfee. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Who are some of the other folks you've featured on your channel?
I've done Thierry Tilly. He's this he started a cult. He pretty much like he found this aristocratic family, and he convinced them that that Jews, Rosicrucians, and ninja assassins were after them, and they wanted to kill them because within their souls they held this deep knowledge of like that would lead them to the coffers of like kings and past generals and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he continued to keep them secluded for like 10 years. Actually, I went really deep on that one. I hired a translator. They translated the like books from French to English for me. The translated documentaries, you know, clips online and stuff like that. But otherwise, like, yeah, I've done Dan Ninen, who's this, like, just really notorious comedian who is really just not funny at all. You know, he was like, he worked at Intel before he started doing comedian and that comedy, excuse me. And then what he did is he started marketing himself as like, the only half Japanese, half Indian comedian who's also a millennial. Meanwhile, he was like 50, wasn't a millennial. Yeah, John McAfee. Yeah, I mean, there's like, it's, I only have like something like 20 or so videos.
So. Well, you're never gonna, if that's your subject matter, you're never gonna run out of it.
I hope so.
I mean, unless people start getting really boring, but tell us about Jack Iedema.
Okay, so yeah, Jack Iedema is this guy who, at the age of 45, he went to Afghanistan. He wanted to capture Osama bin Laden to collect the $25 million bounty on his head. Instead, after he started his own private prison, he was arrested due to the U.S. government's anxieties about basically the Abu Ghraib happened a few months earlier. So there was a whole PR disaster and the United States government, even though they were possibly very permissive of his voting was how his operations, they just kind of put the sword on his neck and you know gave it a slash. And yeah, he was arrested in Afghanistan. He was tried in Afghan courts. He spent 3 years in Afghan prisons, and then he bought a compound in Mexico where he started to use a lot of drugs, and he started to have orgies and extreme amounts of casual sex, and eventually he died of AIDS.
And let's begin with kind of his work, if you can call it that, in Afghanistan, because it's, I was captivated by that part of the documentary. It was, he, you know, like we said, he was one of these like American gold rush people that went to Afghanistan, but he was also very kind of like ideologically, I don't even know if he was really ideologically motivated, but he was definitely, you know, he came from that whole weird American.
Yeah. He was definitely jingoistic.
Like, yeah.
He was,
you know,
also like self, like he was motivated by nonstop self promoter, self mythologizer,
straight up con artist. Yeah. And, you know, there's this whole like culture of America in the '80s, which you're probably not old enough to remember, but that's what I grew up in. And it's like Soldier of Fortune magazine, Ronald Reagan talking about the evil empire all the time. Like you could not get away, like Rambo movies. You couldn't get away from like this really right wing, like beyond conservative perspective in popular culture and the news and the government. And, you know, there was like actually a real problem with like people, you know, Soldier of Fortune magazine came out, I think, in the end of the 70s. And like people would put ads in the back, like, you know, mercenary for hire. And a couple times people like read those ads and then like hired the guy to like kill their wife.
Yeah, there's, you know, yeah.
So it's like, so he was very much, Jack Iedema was very much taken with that. Did he have a military background?
Yeah, so I mentioned in the video actually, he made it into the Green Berets. The thing that I didn't mention is that he joined the Green Berets, or he applied for it and he passed the test at a time that they were kind of desperate for new recruits, mm-hmm. because it was at the tail end of the Vietnam War.
Interesting.
So he just missed the war. And he, like I say in the thing as well, he desperately wanted to fight a war. And that's kind of like the whole Soldier of Fortune magazine thing as well. It's like a lot of what that magazine did was like it pushed like, oh, come join this mercenary group in Rhodesia. Mm-hmm. You know, like that was kind of the whole thing.
Like a racist government in like one of the last colonial governments in Africa.
Yeah, I think it was in Zimbabwe. Right. Zimbabwe is modern day Rhodesia.
Right. Yeah.
It was, But yeah, that was like the whole thing, right? And this is a guy who was obsessed with the idea of counterterrorism way before like the war on terror. So he had like a civilian counterterrorism training school that anybody can apply for. Back in the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this guy was looking at, like, he was probably reading about Israel, you know, back then in, like, Soldier of Fortune magazine and reading about, like, urban warfare and counterterrorism and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he was kind of ahead of the curve in some aspects, but...
He's definitely a visionary of some sort.
I guess you can call that.
I did notice that sometimes, like on his uniforms and on the signs, it would be like counter terror group with two R's in counter, and sometimes there would only be one R. Do you know what that was all about?
Probably just a fuck up.
That's fascinating, and it's like, I mean, if the guy didn't turn out to be such a horrible person, he'd be hilarious, like. Like so many of the details, he's
an SNL. He could be an SNL character if you erase all of the really sordid shit that he's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
he's cartoonish, but evil.
Right. Right. It's like, I guess it's like Trump or, you know, it's like we find that a lot of these guys are.
Oh yeah,
they're cartoonish.
I find myself shit posting about Trump and how much I miss him and how funny he is all the time. I'm like, yeah, this guy wasn't a very good guy. He's a fucking awful person, but
yeah.
God damn, do I miss Donald Trump's tweets?
Yeah, I'll give him that. He is funny. I mean, and then the whole thing about him, like the congressional hearing the other day with. He was like fighting with the Secret Service and trying to take the car to the Capitol for the riot and stuff. And it's like,
yeah,
it's like, I have to believe that he was up to that shit all the time. And like the fact that this only,
I thought that was pretty, yeah, now. It's been pretty obvious this whole time. Right. Like, it's right. Like everybody knew like that. He pretty much instigated that whole thing.
Yeah. But it's like, why are, you know, he's got a, I guess I was just, that behavior is so bad and it took so long and an congressional investigation for it to come out. It's like, what else are they covering up? What else is the Trump White House covering up? And like, you know, how can they live with themselves? I mean, going to bat for a guy like that at this point, it's like, if you're not like,
did he see Sean Hannity like text messaging one of his,
no.
Sean Hannity was text messaging one of his staffers. I forget which one, but it was high up staffer and being like, yeah, he's got to stop with the election talk. election fraud talk. He's got to stop with this and that. It's getting bad. He's got to, you know, he's got to stomp on the brakes here.
Wow. So back to our other narcissist, Jack Idema. He gets out of the military and he's got kind of an abysmal record. He was only in the military for like 3 years. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Then he went into the reserves and, but so he was kind of like this freelance, just entrepreneur chewing around the fringes of the Soldier of Fortune scene. How did he end up in Afghanistan?
So it was through Gary Skirka, who I mentioned earlier in the documentary, who was, a reporter who, among many networks, did work for 60 Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And he um, Yeah, so he wanted to make something for National Geographic in this specific instance. And he said he was going to bring Jack along as like security, like private security, right? And Jack contacted this humanitarian aid worker named Sir Ed Artis. And Ed Artis, he already had like a documentary that was being made about him at the time, but he's like, "Oh yeah, come along." And immediately, Ed Artis started to realize that Jack was literally, he was trying to make a documentary about himself. Right. Cause like this had been in the works for a long time where Gary Skirka had tried, but failed to make a documentary about Jack, actually in the mid-90s.
How did Skirka meet Jack?
He read a Soldier of Fortune magazine article, and then he visited him in prison.
Oh, so Jack was covered in Soldier of Fortune, like his training school or something. Why was he in prison?
Oh, 'cause wire fraud.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah. So it was like extended to his. It was attached to his. Paintball company where he bought a bunch of supplies he didn't pay for, and he created like a shell company and he cheated 60 companies out of I think it was like $600,000 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to prison for 4 years, and he said that it was the FBI was behind his imprisonment because he said that he like it was connected to the because he had information, he said, about like a KGB nuke smuggling operation attached to the Russian mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he tried to tell the FBI, but, you know, that he caught wind that all of them are, that the FBI is has been infiltrated by KGB agents or whatever. So he goes to jail for that. And then... that's pretty much the story that was written in Soldier of Fortune magazine. And I guess Gary Skirka bought it, and he became very close to Jack. So close to Jack that in fact he helped Jack. He was a co-plaintiff on a legal suit that they all did against Steven Spielberg and DreamWorks Studio. So basically like, Jack and Gary Skirka worked for years to make a documentary about Jack or a movie. So they were sending like treatments of Jack's life story to Steven Spielberg. They were talking to every single news network and every single like television network that they could and trying to really just get this story off the ground and get funding behind it. And it never worked out. I actually show... clips from an unaired like kind of like teaser documentary about him that Gary Skirka made. And if you like watch the thing, I think it's within like the first 12 minutes of the documentary, you can like see that the way that it presents Jack is like this hero who was thrown under the bus by the U.S. intelligence agencies and especially the FBI. But he was a hero, even though, you know, that happened.
Yeah. And it's like the lawsuits against Steven Spielberg and, you know, that was over. I guess Jack was constantly like writing screenplays, trying to mythologize his life at a point where he was kind of like, he had not even really done anything except for like get in the paintball business and run this kind of dubious counter-terror training facility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
and
like,
all of that, by the way, being paid for by his dad.
Okay. I was wondering how he funds all this stuff.
Yeah, I mentioned at the end, like near the end, when I'm talking about like how he's trying to get his inheritance. His dad paid for like the building that he ran all this shit out. of, does that pay for a lot of the lawsuits, the appeals, the first time he went to prison? Does that pay for all the appeals for that and lawsuits? And yeah.
Yeah. Like, why? So he hatches this scheme. He gets Gary Skidima, if that's his name.
Skurka.
Skurka, that's right. Gary Skurka. Idima Skurka. Okay. Gary Skurka gets kind of sucked into his world and believes his claims. And they go to Afghanistan to ostensibly film a documentary about humanitarian aid workers. And next thing you know, he has a compound and like his own little prison, private prison. Like, what is going on there?
So this is, here's the thing, right? So it started in 2001, right after 9/11, right? So Jack was in Afghanistan for about a year at that point. And then his mom died, so he went back to Poughkeepsie, New York for 2 years. And then he returned to Afghanistan in 2004. And then in 2004 is when he working off what he said was intel from Al-Qaeda assets that he flipped. And, you know, he flipped them into intelligence assets. Working off intel from them, he learned about like a plot to drive 12 taxi bombs into the U.S. embassy and the U.S. Air base in Bagram. And he also said that he found intel about the possible whereabouts of Osama bin Laden. So then he returns in 2004. He opens up his own his HQ, the Honeycomb Hideout. He starts rounding up all these people, interrogating and torturing people, getting different names, rounding those people up. And then once he captures it was an Afghan judge, a Supreme Court judge, then shit really got real, because within weeks, his mugshot was all over Kabul.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on at the behest of the U.S. Government, who, you know, I think that they already knew about this guy, but by that point, it's like, oh my God, this guy is just a bad look.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's how he got locked up.
Do you have any more insight into how he funded his operation? I mean, you know, rich father, con artist, so he's making money, but like, how else is he making money at that time?
Well, so he had the fake charities. He had the book, the Hunt for Bin Laden book, that he pretty much co-opted, and he made all about himself, like this aged journalist / author Robin Moore. Jack already knew him for years, and he just took over the book, and he inserted fake charities into its pages. And then he also had royalties from that book. He had a lot of money from media appearances. Lawsuits. Yeah, there was one lawsuit he won against a person who, a storage place that was holding all his shit while he was in prison in the 90s. He won a $1 million lawsuit against them. So, he was pretty flush with cash at that point. The next time he also made a lot of money was after his father died, which was when he was in Mexico, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And he collected an inheritance of millions of dollars.
Wow. Well, we'll get to that, 'cause that's like the final nail in his coffin. But he's got this headquarters in Kabul, and do you know, he sounds like a total con artist. that, you know, has gone rogue. But at the same time, he also sounds like someone who the CIA would work with. Have you gotten any indication or evidence of any kind of interaction or cooperation between Jack and CIA or anybody else in the United States government?
No, nothing that I didn't add to the documentary.
So
yeah, it was just him literally. I think he was just calling up, he was calling up like the Pentagon, certain offices in the Pentagon.
So he would communicate, but it wasn't like a CIA asset or anything.
I don't know. I don't think that there's like, I don't think if that's true, I don't think it'll ever come out.
Right.
He said he was. I mean, he was like, they knew what he was doing. He was very vocal about what he was doing.
Right.
So, I don't know. Could be.
Yeah. And so he gets arrested after torturing a number of Afghan civilians. When was that? Like, what year was that?
That was about 3 months after the second time he arrived in Afghanistan, which is 2004.
All right. So he's only in Afghanistan for 3 months before.
No. So that's the second time he arrived. Right.
He's only back in Afghanistan for 3 months before
he's arrested.
He's arrested. And then what was his prison? We think of Afghan prison. It sounds pretty rough. What was him and his people's experience in prison?
Yeah, the most cushy environments possible, right? Like, yeah. So he probably just paid off Afghan officials and he just got, he just got a suite pretty much.
Yeah, it was him and his guys. Like, how many people were involved in that case? You know, other like co-defendants or whatever?
There was 8 members of Task Force Saber 7, which was this paramilitary group.
Task Force Saber 7. I love it.
I know. It's great, right? So there's 3 Americans and then 5 Afghans.
And so he gets a 10-year sentence and then they let him out in 3 years. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And he... And tell me about meeting his future wife while this is going on.
Oh yeah, so I found her YouTube channel. She posted stuff about like clips of him. Mm-hmm. I looked her name up. I found her on Twitter. I asked her, "Would you be interested in participating in this?" And then we talked on the phone a few times, and then eventually we agreed I was gonna meet her in Connecticut. I'm in Toronto, Canada, so I flew there.
Okay. And how did Jack meet her? Like, how'd they meet?
Oh, yeah. So that was through letters. She sent him... No, okay. She was looking him up online a lot, and then she found a website that the documentary film, a filmmaker that was with him, Ed Caraballo. Actually, this guy was, he used to be Anderson Cooper's like favorite cameraman. He was arrested along with Jack Idima, and he was sentenced to, I think it was like 8 years in prison. Mm-hmm. And he ran a website for Jack, and, you know, Jack also, you know, he made posts and stuff, but Ed Caraballo was in charge of all of it. Penny was like part of like, she met a bunch of other Jack Idima fans online and they connected and then eventually found that website. And then they like applied to be like part of like a private group on that website. And then Penny started to communicate with Jack, you know, through emails and then phone calls and then also through letters and stuff like that.
So being in jail did not slow Jack down at all. He had a website. He had like a fan club. He was interacting.
Oh,
with
yeah. Everything. Yeah. Yeah.
He had a dog. Is that correct?
Yeah. They found a dog somehow. that he brought back with him from Afghanistan to Mexico. I don't know how, like, well, I have all the emails actually, so I know how he did it, but you know, it was, the conditions that he got himself into, like where he's like pretty much living in like such a great cozy place is, it still baffles me.
Yeah. It looked like much bigger than my apartment actually. Well, I, so he's in jail for all of 3 years, and in the meantime, he meets this woman and it becomes romantic. And then when he leaves, where does he go?
So this first
2007, 2008,
he goes to Dubai first, because he has this idea for like a military air cargo company, mm-hmm, that he wanted to make. So he goes there to meet investors, and then following that, he goes to England to collect advance money for a book that he promises to write from Random House. And actually, I didn't mention this in the documentary. And then after that, then he lands in Mexico.
And then, he meets his girlfriend there, and they get married. How's that?
I think they get married like a year after that. Yeah. So like basically what happens is he goes to Mexico. He meets Penny there. She brings Nina the dog. Jack gets a condo. He gets evicted from the condo after being arrested for selling drugs. And then he finds a property in the jungle in Bacalar, and he fixes up the place, and that's where he lives for the rest of his life.
Wow. And what was he doing in Mexico? Did he have any other private military businesses, or was he just partying, or what's Jack Idema doing for the next several years?
So it was like kind of a mixture of a lot of those things, right? So another thing that I didn't really mention that much in the documentary was that he was from what Penny tells me, he was involved with the cartel there. Mm. He was selling drugs, probably selling guns as well, and he was going back and forth between his property and like in Belize. Mm. He was partying a lot, drinking, orgies, and then eventually his lifestyle caught up with him.
Yeah, and so it gets, it's like almost like fun and games, aside from the torture, obviously, until that point. And then things got really dark for Jack. Like, it seemed, I guess it was the death of his father and his receiving an inheritance that led to Jack just going off the rails.
He had so much money, he can fund the most debaucherous lifestyle possible.
And he's an odd man, you know. He's like, he's probably almost 5 foot tall. He's like,
No. He's, I think he's 5'7".
5'7". Okay. So, like, that's like Tom Cruise's official height.
Yeah.
Not his actual height, but like what he tells people. So he's like 5'7", but he's like built like a tank. He's a big guy. And like, he has, like, there's the one shot, you don't hear his voice very much on the movie, but there's this one point just about 33 minutes in where he's like, I can't remember. They're like trying to detain somebody. They put a bag over his head, and then he's like, shit, I'm really mad. And it's
he sounds like Billy Mays.
He does. It's like, you know,
shit,
like,
I'm really mad.
You're just like, who is this guy?
Yeah. And you know why he's mad, by the way? It's because he hasn't broken a mirror in 9 years or something.
Oh,
so now he's unlucky.
Yeah, he said something about I haven't broken something, or you know, but it was like unclear. Oh, so bizarre. It's like, tell me about so when you met Jack's wife, she had a lot of like photos and footage and stuff.
Yeah, she gave me all of it.
That's amazing. Like, it's so, it really is like an intimate look at Jack Iedema. It's, you know, it's, I mean, what a priceless bunch of footage and stuff you got, you know, really. Like, what was his wife like?
Oh, she's lovely. Yeah, I love her to death. Still talk to her. I feel like we're lifelong friends at this point.
Nice.
I'll tell you something I didn't mention in the documentary was that she arrived with Ron Barber, who was the guy who was in prison with Jack the first time, and he went to prison because he made threats against Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
So Ron and her arrive, and they arrive tailed by the Secret Service. and the Secret Service stayed outside of our Airbnb the whole time they were there, the first day and the second day.
Oh, wow. Did you talk to say anything to them? Or
I said hello. I don't think they heard me.
Oh, geez.
My friend who was with me, who helped me out, he said he talked to them a bit.
Oh, nice. What's I'm forgetting her name. Is it Patty or Penny? What's her?
Oh, it's Penny.
Penny, okay.
Penny Alisi or Penny Iedema.
Okay, and Penny, she really just stepped into a whole twilight zone. You know, like, she seems like, I don't know what she was like. I don't know her, obviously, but it's like, she doesn't seem like the kind of person that would purposefully cavort with mercenaries or...
Well, I think she thought, like she said, she thought he was this patriotic hero type guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, you know, she was already in love with him, and, you know... You know how these things go sometimes.
Sure,
It's murky. It's nuanced, right?
Well, how did she first hear about him? Like,
she heard about him on Don Imus's show.
Oh, okay. Another thing we can blame Don Imus for. so what kind of life did Penny and Jack have when they finally got together in Mexico?
Well, it was good for a while. I mean, but then eventually it got really bad, right? Especially once, you know, so she tells a story about how 2 years before she was diagnosed with AIDS, that Jack bled in the pool on his property while having like a party, and he was screaming at everybody to get out of the pool. And she didn't understand it at the time. Until, you know, much later. So she believed that he knew that he had it, and he carelessly spread it around a bunch of people bunch of people.
Wow. And I mean, that's psychopathy, psychotic behavior, but also, you know, like, there were treatments available. Like, he could still be alive today if he, but I guess he couldn't come to the United States.
Yeah. He was worried that there was a sealed indictment against him. And then also he had a bunch of other legal problems in the States.
Mm-hmm. And during this time, is he hiring lawyers in the States and suing people and making money?
Yeah. He's always had lawyers who helped him out, and he was a very quick study, and he understood the law very well, and that's how he was able to sue so many people. If you look him up on Pacer, he has around like 76 lawsuits and appeals in total.
Wow.
There's even more on LexisNexis.
Like, what are some of these, like, we know about you know, the lawsuit against Steven Spielberg over his movie. What were some of the other?
So there was earlier on when he was doing his like his fake like what's it called military training program thing. He was sued by the state that he had the business in. Or no, he sued them because they pretty much they evicted him because of like noise complaints. He also, yeah, there's just so many of them. He sued Condoleezza Rice.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, well, while he was in prison in Afghanistan, he sued Condoleezza Rice in the State Department.
Oh, that is funny. I mean, wow. So he's in Mexico, and he's with Penny and the dog and working for the cartels and doing drugs. And then it sounds like at the end it just turned into, like, one big orgy, like... Jack.
Yeah. Thing. So he started posting like profiles and ads on gay hookup sites like manhunt.com. When he posted them, he also said that he didn't have HIV, by the way. He also he posted ads saying that his place was like the ultimate gay vacation place. And yeah, like he was charging people to come over and, you know, involve themselves in the orgies and stuff like that. And yeah,
I know that like sexuality is a spectrum, but was he always gay? Do you think, or was this?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, did he?
He was in prison for a very long time. Yeah. Not only the 3 years in Afghanistan, but 4 years after being charged for wire fraud.
Mm. So, yeah, I guess I'm just wondering, and I don't know if you could know this, but maybe you asked Penny. Like, do you think that he married her out of convenience, or?
Well, I didn't add this into the thing, but she called herself a beard.
Oh, okay.
Also, the other thing I didn't add is that Jack was a bottom, and he, what he would like to do is he would snort cocaine all night while being railed, basically.
What a life. I'm very uncomfortable with the direction this is taken, but that's on Jack. So he gets AIDS. Do we know when he got AIDS?
No idea.
Yeah. And by the end, he basically had, he was so paranoid and so crazy. He basically had Penny held hostage. He tortured her in, you know, scenes that are very reminiscent, eerily reminiscent of like what they were doing in Afghanistan and what.
Yeah. That's the thing. I really regret not showing footage during those segments of him like interrogating people in Afghanistan. That would have been really good, I think.
Do you have footage of that?
Of him interrogating people in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
I added it to the doc. Okay. I just showed it much earlier.
Okay. That's so wild. And then where's Penny end up, and how does she get back to Connecticut?
States? So a plumber helped her out to get out, and then he took her to the Mexican police, and they did. She was raped, which is another thing I didn't add to the documentary. I was worried about YouTube monetization. But he raped her while he was torturing her as well. They did a rape kit, and she was sent back to the States, and pretty much in the matter of a year, because the other thing I didn't add is that Jack ran up credit card debt on a lot of women, not only just Penny. a lot of men and women. And he took a lot of money from them as well, that they gave him to support him. And Penny was victim to that as well. And, you know, she was struggling, and at the same time, she was president of this company, Isabel Dakota, which his father gave to him. And she threatened to dispose of the corporate assets unless he paid off the credit card debt. And eventually what she did is she sold the deed to the company's building for $10. And he freaked out, and his like his consortium of hangers-on, his fan club online, they him and them started posting revenge porn of her, and they onto blogs, and they also sent it to her parents.
That's, I mean, he just was just a horrible person to the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awful.
Yeah, and so how did he die?
Of AIDS. I think it was that, the car accident, plus the drug abuse and alcohol abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he died.
Yeah, and he was in his weird compound in Mexico.
Yeah. By that point, his God, I couldn't verify this exactly, but I've heard and I've read people saying this in the emails that I have and stuff that Penny gave me, that his all of his assets were they were frozen by that point. So from what I understand, he might have died broke and. Yeah.
The reason I think I find the story so compelling, and again, I urge everybody to check it out. The link will be in the show notes here. It's like, it's not just, yes, he's a horrible narcissist, con artist, psycho person who ruined hundreds of people's lives probably. But also it's like, these are the kind of people that are attracted to war. And these are the kind of people that like the military uses when they occupy countries. So it's like, we don't know if he was like how hand in hand he was with the military, the American military, but you know, there are other Jack Idemas out there. It's just they're, you know, most probably or hopefully aren't as colorful or as weird maybe as this as Jack is, but it's like it just feels to me like some kind of like metaphor for overseas wars or colonization or something. What else do you got going on? You working on your next big story?
Yeah, I got something coming next. I'm not sure what it is.
Hey man, this has been great. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
People find Oki's Weird Stories?
Oki's Weird Stories on YouTube. OKI spelled phonetically on Twitter and Instagram. Yep. And then Oki Weird on Patreon.
Oki Weird. All right, Oki Weird. I'll be sure to put that all in the show notes. And thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Take care.